Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It has been a week. Boy, has it been a week.
Has it been a week?
It has. It has really been a week.
Since we've last been here and since all that stuff happened.
The good news is the Six Color Secret Podcast is already on top of things because we are already a service.
That's true.
Because you're listening to this because you are subscribing to a service, the service being Six Colors. So I'd like to introduce Six Colors Plus, which is just what we already do, but I'll call another way I can refer to it.
I was going to say we should, which I won't, we should do. Have an upsell service.
Yes. If you'd like to pay $60 a month, you get the same things, but you give us more money. And that's the feature. Six Colors Plus. Enjoy.
If you'd like to pay us $5,000 a month, we will come in and just sit and talk to you in your home once a week.
Somebody might take us up on that, Dan.
$5,000 a month?
Yeah,
I'm willing to do that.
For $60,000 a year, you will fly to somebody's house in like Saskatoon once a week to talk to them?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. Everybody's got a price. So there it is. Dan Morin, you heard it here first.
I tried to. Maybe I should have gone higher. I know. I'm bad at business.
Personalized service there. Yeah, so services. I got to go to the Steve Jobs Theater again. That was nice.
Never been. Probably will never go. But, you know.
Probably not.
Never say never, you know, I guess.
They got those pictures of you up that say, do not allow in.
Yeah. Yeah, vodka thief.
Yeah, that's fine. Do not give heroin. So, yep. Yeah, if you're a fan of You're the Worst, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, that's where we were going with that.
That's, yep. I don't even know where to start with this. Anything particularly grab your attention out of all of the raft of announcements? Is there something that you're still thinking about at the end of the week from the beginning of the week?
Yes, but it's also, there's so much of it is vague and we don't really have details that are like hard, crunchy details on some of these things. So for example, you know, Apple Arcade is interesting. I think that's a smart move on Apple's part. I'm really curious as to whether or not it ends up being a good deal for developers because I can see the upside for them. There's like a financial security to it, especially with this report that Apple is helping like chip in for some of the development costs. Like it's risky making a game for anything, much less like iOS, especially the kind of games that Apple seems to be pushing here, which are games that are indie in large part, not entirely, but a lot of them are like
Sega is in there, but there's a lot of those kind of indie games too.
You know, I think, you know, Monument Valley, Alto's Adventure kind of stuff where it's like stuff that kind of hits a big, looks great, and really puts the platform on display. I think that's a big part of it, right? Is like showcases the features and the attractiveness of iOS and stuff that's compelling and draws people in. And, you know, if you're not Sega or one of the other giant companies, it's a lot of money to put out there for something that may or may not succeed. And you know, these businesses are predicated on these kinds of risks. They are aware of them. That is, you know, hopefully if your business is run well, you've sort of figured out what is our acceptable risk level. But having Apple there as a cushion certainly helps. I'm super curious about how that pays out on the back end. Like, it kind of seems like maybe this is almost a kind of like a book deal situation where it's like, we will advance you a certain amount of money to cover your development costs, and then you will earn out essentially based on how many people actually play your game. I don't know. Like, it's a weird metric.
Well, they've got screen time, right? So they can actually measure the amount of time you're spending in each game and dole out money
that's
based
really
on that.
So like,
or maybe it's a combination of like app launches and time spent.
I was gonna say
some games are
going
to require more time than others,
right? And the time spent thing is wacky too, because it's like, what if you're just really bad at a game but you keep playing it? Like, that is potentially more valuable than somebody who's really good at a game and beats it really quickly. I don't know. Also, is there really an advantage as far as time spent? Like, does that matter to Apple? Probably not. Like, I don't think they necessarily care as much about how much time you're spending playing a game versus time you're spending doing other things on your phone. I think probably downloads is probably more important to them because it shows some sort of level of engagement. But yeah, I don't know. It's a strange proposition. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued about it because there are definitely games that I, you know, I really like that time. That type of game appeals to me. It's also Apple trying to dig itself out of a hole because it's basically the challenge has been all these free-to-play games that, you know, are ad-based or require in-app purchases. And while Apple does certainly make money off in-app purchases, you know, the all the free-to-play ad games or whatever don't really net it anything. And they're not... It doesn't mesh with Apple's image or the image Apple wants to put out there, right? Like, they don't necessarily want people thinking of, like, really... like crappy games that are time sinks and just splashed with ads all the time. It's not the experience Apple has ever wanted to sort of, you know, find itself associated with. So,
but it's the choices they made led to this point, right?
Right.
And so now they're trying to come up with an alternate path that allows the other kinds of games that they'd like to see flourish that make their platform look good.
Exactly.
Survive.
Yeah. So it makes perfect sense from Apple's perspective, and it makes depending on the price may make pretty good sense from a consumer perspective,
right?
But then the big question is always the developers. Do they get sort of squeezed out there in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I think it's interesting, right? Like, I want to hear from the developers, and I haven't read anything from developers about this because I think that they don't know, and the people who are in probably can't say, and we will find out when it launches, like, how it's going. But my impression from the game subscriptions that exist on consoles, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, also a combination of things to get to 100 games. So you've got high profile games, right, in different categories, even where they've been bankrolled by, you know, the platform vendor. And that is part of the, like, you want the marquee things to get you in the door. This is like your high budget TV shows,
sure,
right? Like,
yeah,
you want the big prestige things that get people like, oh, I got to see that. But you got to fill your catalog out. So
right, they can't have 100 games that are Monument Valley. Like, that's just,
right,
it's unfeasible.
Right. Well, or a deal with Sega where they pay Sega a lot of money to do a Sonic game, right?
Right.
So they've got to have ones that are kind of more indie games that are like from... Flip Flop Solitaire guy.
Sure. Zach Gage, yeah.
Zach Gage, right? Like, Zach Gage is a great example of somebody who I'll phrase it this way, that Apple would love to have in this. Zach Gage may not be interested in Apple's terms. I don't know. Or it could be, like, literally he could look at it and be like, no, forget it, never. Or he could look at it and say, yes, that's exactly what I want to do. I don't know, because
right,
I don't know the terms.
Could be somewhere in the middle.
His business.
It could be somewhere in the middle, too. Like, oh, well, that's interesting. Maybe I'll give that a try for some title that I'm working on. But I maybe, you know, at the same time, probably don't want to shift my entire business
Although
over
to that. I mean, his games tend not to be crappy.
His
games tend to be good. And then there's, like, basically you can play it a little bit. And then there's a single IAP, I think, to mm-hmm. unlock it all. So he might be the kind of person who actually says, oh, this is great. I don't have to build that wall. It's just a fun, because he makes great games.
Yeah,
his games
absolutely.
Are all so good. He just did the pool,
Pocket Run,
the pool
pocket
game.
Run.
Yeah, Pocket Run,
that's
pool.
Good game.
And Really Bad Chess is, I love that. Mm-hmm. I still love that. That's so great. Stuff like that. Apple does have now up on its developer website a button that you can push that basically is like, hello, Apple. I also have a game that I would like to talk to you about, which, quite honestly, they need to do that, right? Because part of what they need to do, and I'm reminded of, like, on Nintendo's systems, you get those, like, you get the big Nintendo games, but in the eShop, you also mm-hmm. get all of those little indie games.
Sure.
And some of those little indie games are great. And I think that's one of the things Apple needs to do here is Apple needs to sweep in a bunch of small indie game developers for whom the being in the 100 games in Apple Arcade is going to be almost certainly a better business than being a lonely little game in the App Store.
Well,
right?
It's interesting because I did briefly subscribe to the Xbox game service because there was a title coming out that I wanted to play, and it was in the service. And the service, like, there was a deal or something, you know, like $30 bucks for 6 months or something like that. And I was like,
right.
Oh, that's a better deal. You know, I'll subscribe for 6 months and see how it goes. And, like, I went through the catalog briefly and I was like, man, most of the games that are in here are either games that are kind of on the older side, so a lot of which I've played or, you know, very clearly had no interest in playing. And then stuff from Microsoft and its affiliates, like stuff that Microsoft published, because obviously they had a good incentive to get that in there. But like the good stuff, the new stuff that was coming out and was like the real marquee titles wasn't in the game subscription service, because, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 is still going to make everybody pay $60 a copy. Yeah. And they can do that because they are like one of the most anticipated games of the year. So, you know, similarly, a lot of the other sort of high profile titles, they don't come to subscription services because there's not enough right. benefit for them. But that's the consoles, which is an entirely different game. No
also,
pun intended.
Once a game has been is old, they sometimes will drift.
Right.
And that can be, if you're not somebody who's playing that triple A brand new, I got to play it now. Like if you wait a year.
Sure.
And it's still pretty good. And I can see Apple doing that too, where they take a game that was, you know, out on the App Store with IAP and all of that. And they say after a year, they're like, how's that going for you? You want to do a version that's totally unlocked, that's inside? And some games, the in-app purchase is like the gameplay mechanic, which is really gross, but that's what it is.
Right.
But a lot of them, it really is just, you know, unlimited plays with that.
Yeah.
And I could see Apple potentially going to them and saying, you know, maybe there's a... They'll learn. They'll find it out. But it's possible that this will lead to a windowed approach where after 6 months or a year, some of these games that are out there trying to be free to play with in-app purchase and their royalties come down to a point where they're like, or their sales, where they're like, yeah, Apple, why don't we try it inside the subscription service now?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know, but... I'm going to say it, Dan. I think this is the single most lucid Apple games announcement ever. Ever. Because it feels like...
Yeah, I agree with that.
It feels like... Because Apple... So, people have been playing games on Apple platforms forever. But I got to say, it's never really been because Apple got games. It's
nope.
been because Apple built platforms for other reasons, and then people wanted to play games on them. And even the App Store, like... Games was not what the plan was.
They fell into it. I mean, and it's the... I made a couple cracks about this week, including in my Macworld piece about, you know, if when you remember Macworld Expo 1999, when Steve Jobs came up to show off this brand new amazing game that was going to be on the Mac from Bungie, and you've never seen it before, and here it is, and that was Halo, and then of course Microsoft bought it like before it ever came out on the Mac, and then didn't come out on the Mac for years afterwards, and... yeah, they've never, it's, you know, they like to talk about how music is part of their DNA. Games has never been part of their DNA, even when it was successful on the platform. And I always felt like anytime they were talking about games on stage, it was like the Steve Buscemi clip. Hello,
yes,
fellow kids.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah, like, it's like,
games are very important, everybody.
Yeah, so they'd be like, here's all these awesome technologies you can use to make games. Like, our job is done here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we were walking away. So this is, I don't know, Apple is so big now. This is the funny thing, right? Is that Apple in those days was a lot smaller, and they were focused on their core markets, and gaming was never a core market, especially on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And with the App Store, it was sort of like they were just focused on the money of the App Store part, and then everything else just kind of happened. And yeah, they bring along core technologies like Metal or whatever, but like really, it's not their thing. They're at the size now that I suspect that what's going on in the background of an announcement like this is that they've hired like game professional people, like who know how these things work and who know, like, and unlike the TV industry, the video game industry probably doesn't leak quite as badly, but like, I wonder if they, and maybe somebody knows, maybe it has been published and I just missed it, but I wonder if they hired somebody who is essentially their Zach Van Amberg, Jamie Ehrlich counterpart, who is a longtime games industry executive who basically in charge of like development and stuff, who's been put in charge of Apple Arcade. It would make sense because it feels like that. It feels like I said, lucid is the word I'm using here. It's like, it's not that Apple hasn't had wins in gaming. It's that Apple never really has done anything that was a move that was like, aha, that is a very canny gaming strategy. Instead, it's like, oh, Apple TV plays games and you could buy a controller, but it's extra. You know, and this one is like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Like it just, I was kind of preparing for that hitch where I'm like, oh, it's Apple. They still don't. And I never got it. Like,
yeah.
At least on the surface here, it's like, oh, I think this is a very reasonable thing, as well as, by the way, fascinating in its admission, the two big admissions on Monday of failings. I mean, they didn't come out and say it because Apple never admits failure. but failings of Apple's. And one of them is, oh yeah, the App Store policies really do completely distort the market and lead to a runaway success of this one kind of game that's kind of crappy, but it makes a lot of money for everybody, so I guess we'll just keep it. And then the other admission, of course, was, oh, the future of TV is in apps.
Yeah.
Oh, oh yeah. Right, right. And that's, you know, that's the best we can hope for. And regarding, just pulling in other threads here, regarding like the keyboards, and Joanna Stern wrote that hilarious thing where she got her web, see, as a former editorial manager, I look at that and it's like, wow, she got her web people to build a tool to break all the characters in her story like it was typed on a bad keyboard. I was very impressed by that. But that's a good example too of Apple has a problem. What Apple never does is say, we admit we had a problem, we're really sorry, here's a new thing that fixes
that's the
problem.
First step.
What Apple does is say, hey everybody, great news, we have a new keyboard that's awesome.
Right, right.
And never talks about the old keyboard or why it was not awesome. And so likewise on Monday, they never really said, well, future TV is apps, that was a mistake. They just say, guess what? The future of TV is the TV app. Yeah, so yeah. Use it. That's Apple. They're never, I mean, most companies are like that, but Apple is so proud. So proud. They're never going to, say it any other way.
I will say, I went to search when you were mentioning the game, did they hire a game executive? Couldn't find any news about that, except there is currently an open job listing on Apple's site for head of games business development App Store.
Oh, interesting.
So if that's your gig, then hey, go apply, because sounds like they'll have a lot of work for you.
Right, but this is the right thing. That's the right kind of person to put in charge of Apple Arcade, is somebody who is going to make the deal. It's actually at least a little bit like Shahid's, our friend,
right.
Shahid Kamal
.
Ahmad, where he did for PlayStation in Europe.
Yep.
You know, the idea is there's this whole, I'm interested to see what Shahid is going to think about all of this. I don't know if they've done a remaster this week on Relay, but because that's, you know, that's the business of game development. Not of even developing the games.
Right.
The business of game publishing and platform curation and stuff like that. And it's like deals.
Yeah, it's like
it's
partially
deals.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of business. There's some developer relations. Like,
well,
it's a melding of these
Zach Van
things.
Amberg and Jamie Ehrlich's job is also not sitting in a room throwing pencils in the ceiling, right?
Like,
their job is they're making deals, but there's also a creative aspect of it, which is they're choosing what deals to make based on the shows they want to buy and what the product overall product is. So it's this very interesting, and this is why they get paid a lot of money, these executives, if they're good at their job, and sometimes if they're bad at their job, they still get paid a lot of money, is you have to balance being a canny business person with being somebody who understands the creative process and is trying to build a product that is the product you want, but you can't micromanage it either. You can't say, write this episode of this TV show. You have to kind of like, you know, massage it of like, I see, I like where you're going there, and here are some notes and all that. It's a tough job, but it's a similar job, I think, to on the game side, where there's an art to it, but it's also commerce. It also is like,
it's because
money is changing hands.
Right. I mean, you know, like Hollywood, it is a giant, giant business right now, games. And it has been, by some accounts, larger than Hollywood at various points.
Yeah.
Depending on how you count. And sure, like, you know, especially mobile.
And iOS is a huge game platform.
Yep.
Like, it is.
Yep.
Apple doesn't have a console per se, although Apple TV still continues to be available to play
console.
Games. But it's not a console, right?
It's
a TV output for a it's like when you dock a Nintendo Switch, is basically what it is. So, the garbage truck is here. It's very exciting.
Excellent.
I'm talking to Dan, and the garbage truck is here. Anyway, so that's, you know, Apple does have a powerful mobile platform, and that's why this subscription service is like, these are mobile exclusives, only on our subscription service. So they might be available on other platforms, but not mobile platforms. And if they are on other platforms, they're not in a subscription bundle. And that seems to be the terms that they're laying
out.
So
there are some loopholes for it, and you're not like locked into necessarily just developing for this one single marketplace, which is probably good, because I assume a lot of game developers want to take a broader approach in the same way.
So you could put it, you could put it on Xbox and PlayStation, but you might not be able to put it on Switch.
Yeah.
And you won't be able to put it on Android.
Right. So, you know, like same way that if I'm writing a book, I don't want people to only be able to read my book on the Kindle, even if it is the biggest like ebook marketplace.
Right.
You're kind of limiting yourself there.
You want to be everywhere.
So games, obviously, I don't know what to think about the Apple Card. I did really like Matthew Panzerino. Got some details that I posted a link to yesterday, and I know you were looking into some stuff too. But like, I can't quite tell with the Apple Card if it's like There's all these different angles that you could take depending on how charitable you're feeling. You could be like totally cynical about this being like a space grab for Apple to just like muscle out the credit cards for, you know, get more people into Apple Pay using its service. It gets to hold a lot more money, you know, like it probably reduces transactions for other third party cards because like they can don't have to give a cut essentially. Like, I don't know. Like, you could be totally cynical about sort of the cash grab aspect of it, or the like sort of foothold that it's making. Or you could be totally altruistic and say, like, well, Apple thinks the credit cards are terrible and are reinventing this entire industry and they're going to, you know, force everybody else through sheer force of will to, like, improve their offerings and all that. I think I'm probably somewhere in the middle. But, you know, it's so they spoke about it in really glowing terms that aren't all things that, you know, are really that different from what's already out there. But there are more things that they have improved based on Panzerino's piece that, you know, say, like, what are the things, where are the places that Apple can actually make a difference? And they aren't as much in the, like, the fact that the credit card industry is still kind of awful.
I think, so my read on Apple Card, the short version, and I wrote a Tom's Guide piece about this, if you want to read 900 words of the long version, is two things, which is, one, if you're Apple, you look at all the money flowing through Apple Pay and you say, ah, but if it was our credit card, yeah, we wouldn't have to split that money with a credit card provider. So it's not like we need to take over, but it is, why are we not offering to be the whole package here? Right. Which is very Apple, right? Why don't we're offering A in a system that has A and B. Why don't we also offer B? Okay. So I think that's very much like a, we're leaving money on the table. I like Mike Hurley because he used to work at a bank he said 2 years ago, like, Apple will be a bank. Apple eventually will just be a bank because this is where they're going, because it allows them to be, to and in this case, I think the parallel with Singular is actually really good, or AT&T, but with the original iPhone, which is they found a bank that doesn't have a lot of, or any, I don't know, credit card business, and that was willing to, you know, basically accede to Apple's demands in exchange for having access to Apple's, you know, cash flow and great customers. So I think that's all part of it. It's just Apple saying, why not us? And then the other part of it is Apple wanted to make a card that highlighted the things that they cared about, and that was easy, you know, but not, so what it's not, and I think it's kind of fascinating. I think Apple's a victim of its own hype and its own rep when it comes to this stuff, but what it's not, and everybody was saying this on Monday, it's like, I saw multiple people say, as a points hound, which is not a thing that I knew was a phrase, yep, but it is apparently, this isn't a very good card. And Panzerino said that, Brian Chen said that. And that's my take on it, which is, of course not. Of course not. If you are a coupon clipper, if you are somebody who has like three different cards and you use this card for this kind of purchase and this card for this and this card for that, and you know the points go here and you know the best place to redeem your points here is on this place for this kind of product, and you manage it all and you do all of that, you will find way better deals than the Apple Card. Yeah. What Apple is counting on is that most of its customers just want it to be easy, with some really easy benefits. And like having the cash come back on Apple Pay Cash every day so you can actually see it, having the extra features in Wallet. Mm-hmm. Like, again, is this a revolutionary credit card? No, but it is Apple like making some choices in terms of privacy and security that are within the realm of what any credit card can offer, but they're pushing all of those levers toward the one end.
And they don't need to. That's the thing, is unlike all those other credit card companies, which kind of all want to shovel you into other things to make money off, right? Like, they want to use your information, they want to analyze all your purchases, you know, they want to do all this stuff to sort of upsell you and get you. Apple doesn't need any of that. They already have plenty of money from other sources. Like, they can afford to basically sit back and say, yeah, we're just gonna provide a product that's better in their kind of time-honored fashion, or at least that they think is better, without having to resort to the things that they find distasteful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not their business model. They're approaching the credit card market as a phone maker, right? Essentially,
yes.
as a tech platform. So they just want, and this is, again, it's totally logical. It is an extension of what Apple's been doing all along, which is, Apple, because of their business model, maybe because of their ethics, but definitely because of their business model, Apple is, you know, doubling down on privacy and security stuff. And every single announcement on Monday had a line about privacy and security in it. Yeah. Every single one. Yeah. This is their thing. They've got the privacy ad campaign running, and they're leaning into it because they know a lot of people are bugged by the fact that there are people are watching them on the internet, and their technology is being used to monitor
and
them and resell information, right?
Breaches and data breaches and Facebook taking all your info.
So with their credit card, they're like, no, we're gonna push it all the way in that direction. We're gonna make our deal with Goldman that basically says you can't resell this information for ads and marketing. Like, nope, you can't do it. That's part of it, and they agreed to that. And the deal is, because it's 1% on the physical card. The physical card is kind of an Apple, like that could have been a Saturday Night Live sketch, right? Like that was like, it's made of titanium and etched by a laser. And it's like, yeah, okay, Apple, we get it. But it's 1% back on that and 2% back on Apple Pay. And that's because this is really an Apple Pay product. They don't want you to use the physical card. And so they're disincentivizing you to use it because they want you to use Apple Pay. And then 3% on Apple purchase. Well, who do we know who cares about privacy? Who do we know who wants things that are super easy and convenient, including their rewards that they get back, who buys a lot of Apple stuff and who uses Apple Pay a lot? I know the vast bulk of iPhone users. That's who. It's like a perfect market for them. Yep. And so, no, Apple Card's not... I mean... There are takes out there that are very much like, well, Apple Card's not the best credit card for rewards. It's like, no, of course it's not. Because Apple, it's just like how Apple doesn't sell a $400 laptop. Like, no, that's not what they're doing. But they are prioritizing their things, which are ease of use, convenience, and privacy and security. And that's why I think the Apple Card will be successful.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of people...
But it's not revolutionary,
and it's not
the best card on the planet. There's no doubt about that. But it could be easy, super easy.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Convenient.
Easy. I mean, for a lot of people who don't want to have to deal with getting a credit card or shopping around, right? Like, you know, I just need a credit card because I need to be able to pay stuff. Like,
or strategizing every quarter, more or less. Lauren comes to me and says, "Okay, here's where you should use the Discover card this quarter." And I'm like, "Jesus, I don't want to do this."
Yeah, right?
Like, I don't want to do it. And I get that Brian Chen and Matt Panzerino and other people like they want to grind on that. I view it like coupon clipping, where it's like how much time are you spending to save $50 or whatever.
Well, it's like, you know, Kat does a little bit of that because she used to travel a lot more, so that was more helpful for her.
But yeah, and the travel deals. I thought about it, but I read an article about how the Southwest Airlines card is the best card because it gives you so many points that you can get their companion pass, basically two people fly for the price of one. It is a spectacular deal. It's the best deal, I think, in airline flying stuff, but I might actually get that, or I might get the Amazon Prime card because I spent a lot of money on Amazon and I'm a Prime member, and they've got good
and the
rates
Apple
there
card.
But the point is, when I do it, I haven't gotten a new credit card in like 5 years.
Yeah,
when I do it, I'm not going to look at it again for 5 years. I'm not going to be churning through, nor do I want five active credit cards, right?
Yeah.
So Apple is just like, forget it. Just sign up on your phone. Use it for all your Apple Pay. It's super easy. Right. Pay it every month out of your bank account and you're done.
Yeah.
And like, that's appealing.
The other thing that appeals to me about this, and perhaps to you and other people of our ilk, is because of the 3% on Apple stuff, including, you know, the iTunes store.
Yeah,
I buy a lot of apps. I rent some movies. I pay Apple for cloud storage, and I buy devices. All of that. It's like, there's a strong argument for me to be using that as sort of a catch-all card for all of my Apple services, which is kind of exactly what Apple wants, right? Like, they get you coming and going at that point. But it has enough of a benefit to it that it's like, well, that might actually be an advantage. So, yeah, I mean, you buy a couple expensive iPads and, you know, a new Mac and some, you know, new iPhone every year or whatever, and it's like, well, I guess I could slap my iPhone upgrade program on that card and basically I would be all set. So
you could, I mean, I heard from some people who said, well, yeah, but you should just buy your Apple stuff from Amazon and use the Amazon card and then you get 5% off. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but then
that's fair.
That's fine. I can't use the Apple program, like if I wanted the iPhone upgrade program or something.
But
like that,
that's right. Right.
That,
and I can't remember the last time I bought an Apple product on Amazon. That's not true. I bought a MacBook Air on Amazon yesterday because it was $9.99 for the Retina one. By the the way, little tip, if you want that MacBook Air, don't pay $11.99 for it. Watch Amazon. Go to Camel.
Yep.
If you haven't seen it, I actually put a link in my, when I updated my what laptop to buy for students article, which I just did, and I posted a link on Six Colors, and I changed the article because they changed all the laptops to the MacBook Air, because that's the answer. It's the MacBook Air. That is the default laptop everybody should buy if they need to buy a new Mac laptop today. There are some outlier situations, but like especially for students, people who are not, you know, software developers, I think that it's the right choice. And there's a link in there to the Camel page on it, because that's the search engine that watches Amazon prices. If you don't know, it's a fantastic resource.
I've used that a bunch.
And it comes down to $9.99. It has done that several times. Also, there are sometimes other deal sites that offer it. This is one of those funny things where, yeah, technically it's an $11.99 laptop, but Apple is definitely discounting it. And so if you watch for a deal, you can get that Retina MacBook Air for $9.99, which I've now bought two of them for $9.99, because that is the price for that laptop. And it's a fantastic deal at $9.99. So I did buy one on Amazon, but I rarely do, because usually you have to get, you know, your immediate, you know, when can I get it now, is always through the Apple online store. So that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't help me if I had an Amazon card, because I would need to go through Apple. So everybody's different. Everybody's got a different relationship. I heard from a lot of people talking about the interest rates on it. Like, fundamentally, there's a different, it's also about your relationship with credit, because I pay off my credit card every month. Credit to me is a convenient payment method. And if you're somebody who doesn't pay off their credit card every month, that is a different
That's a different
calculation entirely.
Right. And yeah, for me, it's like you said, it's a convenient payment method, and it provides a certain degree of insulation from fraud and the like, which not all other payment methods do.
Yes. Correct.
And the security, the security stuff that Apple is building. I mean, first of all, I love Apple Pay, and we wish I could use it everywhere, basically. So there is certainly adding that sort of security onto the cards as well, in the way that they're doing it, which is like, you can't entirely duplicate what Apple Pay does via a physical card, but you have taken steps to try and make it as secure as you possibly can, and still have to work with the, you know, the vagaries of our current credit card system.
Right.
And that is also appealing as someone who has, you know, had cards skimmed and people try to apply for credit cards in my name. Like, it's no fun. The system is stupid and works badly. And if Apple can nudge the rest of the industry towards fixing those problems, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll have more next week, because Apple is awake. Oh, I do have one update before we go, which is about previous week's news, which is sitting right behind me right now is the high-end, top-of-the-line, build-to-order, 9th generation Core i9 iMac.
Ooh.
So I am, you know, people have been talking about that, the iMac Pro gap, the gap between the iMac Pro base model and the highest-end iMac. I am literally sitting in the iMac Pro gap right now, because I have an iMac Pro base model in front of me and a high-end iMac behind me. I'm in the gap right now. But how narrow is that gap? That remains to be seen. I need to run a bunch of tests, and honestly, the biggest thing I'm going to do is listen to how loud the fan gets, because that's doing the same tasks as on the iMac Pro, because my understanding is basically like, if it's anything like the last generation, the big difference between them is, I'll grant you, the iMac Pro is $1,500 more than the configuration that's behind me, but also it's got that super quiet fan, whereas when I crank up the iMac, it's gonna really crank up that fan and be noisy. Some people care about that.
Some people do care about
that.
I don't really care about fans, unless it's like, I try not to do, you know, heavy lifting on my machine while I'm on a podcast.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't care.
Yeah, but I've definitely had that where I've done a live stream of something where I'm running like live streaming software, which means it's doing multiple video encodes at the same time as it's streaming video and decoding video,
fair,
all of that. I, on my old iMac, I definitely would have it where the fans would go, and you know, you couldn't hear it too much, but it's definitely bothers some people. Anyway, that's just a little update that they did. Apple sent me an email and said, would you like to look at the high-end configuration? And honestly, if they had said, would you like to look at a base configuration of iMac, I'd be like, meh.
It's an iMac.
Not really.
But
the high-end configuration, that is actually very interesting. So I've got it. here.
But what you
I just have to figure out what to do with it.
Well, what you don't have is an air power. And neither does anybody. Yay.
Yeah, that's true. I did get AirPods, too, this week with a charging case. That's fun.
Fancy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, we continue to be a service. Thank you all for being a subscriber to our service and receiving this podcast as a service.
Oh, and hey,
you receive,
Jason.
Service-wise. Yeah, Six Colors Secret Podcast Plus.
And Jason, it's the end-ish Dan. Of the month, isn't it?
Yes. I aspire to send out the Six Colors magazine later today.
So look for that in your mailboxes, dear subscribers.
That's right. I just need to write my things first.
That's fine. That's fine.
You wrote yours. Stephen Hackett wrote his. I just haven't written mine yet. So
it's rare. I will say, just throw him out there, it is rare the month that I beat Stephen in turning in my pieces for the newsletter. Yeah. So I'm going to take my wins where I can get it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. So anyway, people, keep your eye out for that. That's another part, another service we provide here. Because services.
Indeed.
Services are big.
Indeed.
They're big. But until next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.